This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham and for Cynthia Canty. You've no doubt heard that eating red meat is not healthy for you. Beef production is a big contributor to greenhouse gases causing climate change. Well, now there's a book that challenges much of what we've been told about raising cattle and consuming dairy and beef. The book is called Defending Beef: The Case for Sustainable Meat Production. The author was an environmental lawyer and a vegetarian, but today she's a cattle rancher. Nicolette Hahn-Nyman joins me now. I know a good number of farmers have switched from feedlots to rotating herds and pastures, and you talk about that, but a lot of beef and dairy cattle are still raised in feedlots, eating soybeans and corn. That means production has to include all that agriculture to produce the cattle feed. How does that throw off the calculations you made on the environmental impact of raising beef?
Well, it doesn't throw off the calculations at all because my calculations are based on the current system. Pretty much all beef cattle spend a large portion of their lives on grass. So grazing is incredibly important whether the animals end up in a feedlot or not. And what I'm arguing is that if we simply improved grazing practices, you would have a dramatic positive ecological impact, including being able to mitigate climate change through carbon sequestration in the soils.
You talk about the symbiotic relationship of grasslands and big grass-eating animals, but a lot of the grasslands native to the Midwest and much of the U.S. are no longer here. I mean, a lot of the grasslands today are not the deep-rooted prairie grasses. They're more shallow-root Eurasian grasses, and the big grass-eating animals today are not bison. They're domestic cattle. So can you explain your suggestion that we've got the same thing going on today when we've got very different elements?
It's true. A lot of the native grasslands have been displaced. There's a large portion of the United States that was always grasslands that still is today. But there are also areas that were not historically grasslands that now are, and there are areas that were grasslands that are now, you know, developed. But it remains the case that a large portion of the globe, about 40% of it today, is grasslands. And that everything that exists in those grasslands, starting from the soil up, all of the microorganisms in the soil, and all of the vegetation that exists in those grasslands, and then all of the animal and plant life that depends on those areas, you have to have those ecosystems function properly, the grazing animals. That's the argument that I make. And it really goes way back, sort of from a geological perspective. In order to have properly functioning grassland ecosystems, you have to have the grazing animals as part of that. We don't have the wild animals, and there were enormous numbers of grazing animals covering the globe. So what I argue is that in order to make those ecosystems function properly, whether those are the exact same grasslands that existed historically or not, we still need those large grazing animals. And since we are probably not ever going to have huge herds of wild animals again on the globe, the best thing to do is to use the domesticated animals as the proxy. That's what cattle represent. They represent the opportunity to recreate properly functioning ecosystems.
Let's talk about the health aspects. You write there are a lot of conflicting studies about beef consumption and its impact on health. Can you briefly outline the main points that you're trying to make in the book?
There were decades of public health messages and medical messages that we've all heard that suggested that red meat is bad for our health, primarily based on the suggestion that saturated fat causes heart disease and other problems. That research was started in the 1950s, and there was a good basis for it at the time. But as the cardiologist at Harvard School of Public Health, Darius Mosafarian, says, the science is better now, and we now know that that's really not true. I cite his research and many others in my book showing there are probably other major factors that have shifted in the diet that are the reasons for the rise in diabetes, obesity, heart disease, et cetera, that we're seeing now. And most likely, I think there's very good evidence that it's actually sugar that is much more likely to be the responsible agent in the diet, maybe grain as well. We've had a dramatic rise in grain consumption in the United States over the last few decades. And I think these shifts, as well as the way we're eating processed foods, fast food, we're eating snacks, we're not eating meals. We've had a lot of shifts in our diet. I think that red meat and saturated fat have been wrongly blamed for a lot of the health impacts.
I do want to ask you about one other thing that wasn't in your book, but I think since your book's name is Defending Beef, we have to look at it. The beef industry has lobbied for so-called agriculture disparagement laws and filed lawsuits against reporters and even Oprah Winfrey for statements that the beef industry didn't like. As someone who raises cattle, what do you think of that approach?
I think it's absurd. As you say, it's been going on for a while. That started back when I was still working for Bobby Kennedy, and I actually wrote some memos to him about this issue. They call them veggie libel laws. I have actively spoken out against those in many contexts. You know, the food system needs transparency. We need sustainability from an ecological perspective, and we need information to be available to consumers, and we absolutely need transparency. Those veggie libel laws are going totally against that view. I think that's going against sustainable and healthful practices, and I think there's nothing good about keeping information away from consumers.
Nicolette Hahn-Nyman is the author of Defending Beef, The Case for Sustainable Meat Production. It's published by the Chelsea Green Publishing Company. Thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.